Welcome back to episode 3 of the BlazersEdge.com podcast. This is part 2. If you haven't heard part 1 yet, you can go back to BlazersEdge.com and download or stream part 1. If you're picking us up in the conversation in the middle here, Sam Tung and I were talking about Darrell Wright and the Dallas Maverick game and how he was working himself back into the lineup. So we're going to go ahead and play the rest of that conversation. Well, I think that it's funny that you should mention that the reason why or one of the reasons why was because Darrell Wright was getting playing time. He went from a 15-minute-a-night guy the first several dozen games of the year and just disappeared out of the rotation in favor of C.J. McCollum. I'm wondering if that is a decision based on Darrell Wright's performance, because he wasn't horrible to start the year, at least stat-wise. If you want to go with the eyeball test, he wasn't playing the best defense, but who on that bench was playing decent defense? I really didn't see Darrell Wright to be the weak link, but he seems to have been squeezed out of the rotation. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think a couple thoughts. He was shooting 36% this year.
From the field or from three?
From the field. Ironically, he's shooting 35% from three.
Right.
So he was hitting his three-pointers, but
He's only taken 4 shots a game, and 3 of them are from outside.
That's true. But I do think, part of it, a lot of it could be the defense. I think I'm curious if so much of what makes Mo Williams, what makes Mo is he gets his own shot.
Yes.
And that's really what the Blazers need, because you don't want Thomas Robinson creating his own shot. We've seen what happens. and it's not pretty. Darrell Wright doesn't create his own shot, and we've seen that happen too, and it's not pretty either. So you don't want, you kind of want guys that are coming off the bench that can create their own shot, because a lot of these guys, let's keep in mind, they are bench players. So They're coming in after, they get all warmed up, they get all amped up, then they sit there for 20 minutes and watch everyone else play, and then they get called on. And they basically have to come out cold or come in cold and make an immediate impact. So a lot of what makes a good bench player in my eyes is, if you're the Jamal Crawford type, or if you're the J.R. Smith type that can come in and create your own shot and get, 7 or 8 quick points on your own. And I think that might be what Coach Stotts is trying to do with McCollum is, he's another weapon on offense that you have to pay attention to. In defense of Mo, He's incredibly inconsistent. I mean, some nights you just scratch your head and think, why are you shooting? Why are you still shooting?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But at the same time, he has, as you said, he is what he is. And what he is a guy that's essentially a ball hog that shoots a lot of shots off the bench. And that's kind of what his role is to be able to do that. However, part of that is, he can get his own shot. And part of that too is he can, how do I put it? If you're a defensive, if you're a defender, you have to pay attention to him. Even if he's ice cold, he has that gear where he could go 0 of 10 and then rip off, 4 threes in a row on 4 straight possessions. And just knowing that, you have to keep an eye on him. And I think that having that threat out there is really important, especially when you have another guy on the floor like McCollum that can also score. But, it's obviously Joel Freeland is not an offensive threat. Clearly Thomas Robinson isn't either. unless it's
within 2 feet of the basket.
Yeah, exactly. If he can get inside the lower circle, he's a weapon, but, watching him get the ball anywhere on the perimeter and try to make something happen is certainly entertaining, but not in the positive way.
Yeah, so, not in a good way for Blazer fans, maybe for opposing fans.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, that's probably why they put in McCollum, is to try to have another guy that could create off the bench, even if Mo isn't on, or maybe most importantly, if Mo isn't on.
Right.
But, you know, I guess I really don't know. I mean, part of that could be in practice, CJ could be lethal. You know, he might be the best offensive player in that second unit, and we just haven't seen him unleash it yet. I think that's, you know, that sort of remains to be seen. As you mentioned, he's played what, 10 games in his NBA career or something like that, 15 yeah. games in his NBA career. So 13. I think it's a pretty small sample size to judge him.
You bet. He came out relatively strong, at least a lot more than what I had expected. He was able to create off the dribble a little bit. He had that step back jumper off the dribble. He was hitting his threes actually with a decent amount of regularity. And so McCollum's kind of dropped off a little bit. I mean, I guess it's kind of reactionary to say a guy's dropped off when he's only played 13 games. But, you know, we gotta take the sample size for what it is. That's all we have to work with. So he did start out a little bit more consistent. Lately, he hasn't been hitting his shots with as much regularity. Mo Williams, he's been relatively the same all year, but I have kind of a proposition, I think, that I would like to propose here for Mo Williams. I think that there should be a 3-4 shot heat check rule, where Mo comes out, he does his usual thing, takes 3-4 really quick shots. If they're not falling, then it's not his night, you know, because I think you saw against Washington, he came in and he tried to be that instant offense guy that he has been so many times this year, but it ended up hurting the Blazers offense. At least from what I could tell, he was taking shots that were not necessarily advisable off the dribble, you know, when there maybe would have been an open man or a better option on offense. I think a couple times he might have overlooked an open LaMarcus Aldridge. And so, yeah, I appreciate a guy like Mo coming in and being that instant shot of offense, you know, in the arm right off the bench. But if it's not falling, it just seems to be so disruptive to the team's offense, especially with the maddening amount that he tends to dribble with sometimes. And that play where he'll drive to the basket and then he'll just curl around the post and then usually get trapped. And then it just completely. Are you aware of the play that I'm talking about?
I've seen it once or twice. Yes,
I've seen it once or twice a game at least, and it's kind of maddening to think, because you're looking at what makes this Blazers offense so successful, and it's everything but the ISO. Usually, it's ball movement. If he's gonna drive like that, use that to sag the opposing defenders in and create some space on the outside. But instead he takes it all the way to the rim and then dribbles around a bit and then ends up being trapped and has a hard time passing out of it. So it'd be, I don't know if it's fair to really ask much more of Mo at this point for what he's getting paid, for what his role is off the bench, and the way that Stotts is using him. I wouldn't argue that he's doing anything that is unexpected. It would just be nice to see a little bit of a switch up in his game. Just a little bit. Maybe play a little more of a distributor role, because he was leading the team in assists for a stretch of the season within the last 20 games or so. There was a chunk of about 10 to 15 games where he was actually getting more assists than Damian in a lot of the games. So he clearly is capable of playing that role, and he can clearly flourish within this offense. So I'd like to see him get back to playing a little more consistent team-based basketball instead of the hero ball that I think you've seen him kind of fall into as of late.
I think that while that's true, I do think that what makes Mo, I'm going to try to figure out how to say this that's at all eloquent. I think what makes Mo part of Mo's game and what makes him a weapon is, like I said, it's that threat that he can score. And I think if you have this heat check rule or whatever, where basically if it's not going down, it's not going down. Like, that's not Mo Williams. You know, he's the type of guy where, as I said, he can miss 10 shots in a row and he can heat up after one made basket. So we love him when it's the end of the game and they need something and he makes back-to-back threes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you hate him when you need something and he takes back-to-back threes and he misses them.
He's actually a pretty consistent three-point shooter, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's really his jumper and his floaters that, when those aren't falling, that's when it's really noticeable.
I think that when what you're talking about, I actually think that he has a pretty good floater game, and Damian can learn quite a bit from him. But mm-hmm. to me, the play I hate is the long two. He shoots, and I could be wrong, but it seems like he shoots a lot of low percentage two pointers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of it is, you talked about that, put your head down and dribble around the basket. And then he turns around, sort of freezes for a second, and then takes a fadeaway jumper.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that happen a number of times this season too. But, you know, it's, I think that Mo is, again, what makes Mo effective is the fact that you have to pay attention to him. You consistently have to pay attention to him. And as long as he's shooting, there's always going to be a defender's eye on him. As soon as he becomes only a distributor, I think you take, or at least, you know, leans that direction if it's not on that night, I think that you lose a lot of what makes Mo Williams a threat in the offense. And I do think that a lot of this changes when Mo Williams is the man in that second unit. Like, yes, he can be a distributor, but do you really want him distributing the ball to Joel Freeland?
Depends on where he's passing it to.
Yeah, so I guess, sure, obviously, all this depends, but I think that when he's clearly the offensive, you know, the offensive weapon on the team, when he's playing that, it really seems like they put those four bench guys in with Wes Matthews. That seems like it's the five that they go with in that bench unit.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Matthews isn't really an isolation player unless he's playing back to the basket.
If he has a smaller defender on him, then he's actually got a pretty decent post game this year.
Right. And he's not taking guys off the dribble. That's not his game. You know, CJ can kind of do that, but a lot of what they've been trying to incorporate him in as a catch and shoot guy too, run him off screens and try to figure out if they can, you know, get him in open space. But what makes Mo Williams interesting is that he is the focal point on that team. And, you know, you kind of need him to be the offensive weapon in that bench unit. However, you know, there's times when it's late third quarter, early fourth quarter, LaMarcus is out, but then, you know, you stick Mo and Lillard in and they're playing that lineup. I agree with you then that, you know, if he can play more of the distributor role, more of the, you know, the old fashioned point guard role rather than the Damian Lillard score as many points as possible point guard role.
Mm-hmm.
I think that certainly is where he becomes more effective. And I do agree that he probably leans a little heavy on the, I need to make a basket rather than the bailout guy, which when he's playing with more of the starters, that really needs to be his role.
Yeah. And he can use his ball handling and his penetration to actually help with the ball distribution, because that does collapse a defense. Because as you were saying, there's always going to be an eye on Mo Williams every time he's got the ball on the offensive side. So if he's getting to the basket and he doesn't have a shot, kick it out. Like you were saying, Damian Lillard, excellent spot up shooter. Wes Matthews, you know, they're not going to be playing together a whole heck of a lot. Excellent spot up shooter. Nicholas Batum, at one point this season, he was an excellent spot up shooter.
Recently he's been kind of their go-to 3-point shooter. Even with the broken finger, he seems like he's been playing pretty well.
Batum?
Mm-hmm.
Whew. I don't know from outside. He's right now from outside, he's shooting 15% in his last six games. And those are the six games since.
Okay, then I'm crazy.
Well, you're not crazy.
Scratch that.
He's lowered his shot attempts from outside, actually. He's being a little less aggressive, and he's shooting the ball. He's shooting a couple shots less a game. I think it's since the little injury. But from the field, you know, he's 42%. So he's not terrible from the field, but from behind the arc, 15% is not going to cut it, especially
I'm jaded because he went 2 for 5 in that game against Washington, and now I was thinking that that's how he's been playing. So
I would really love to see Batum use that performance, 2 for 5. As sad as that is, that's his best performance probably of the last 5-10 games
since Dallas.
Yeah, 2 for 5 from outside, which is what, 40%. I could live with that. In fact, I would love that, because he's not even a 40% 3-point shooter on his career. So that would be him playing a bit above his head. If he could do that every night, or at least every other night at this point, it would be awesome, especially in that catch and shoot role that he was fulfilling early on in the season, the same thing that Wesley was fulfilling, and Lillard to some degree when he was catching the ball. They were all able to really nail that shot from the outside, and Lillard in the same time span since that road trip, 22.9% from three. Wesley Matthews has dipped to 36%, which is actually, that's not bad. That's a decent 3-point shooter in the NBA, but the way he started the season, I don't know, you'd like to see it a little bit higher than 36%. So
I don't, the way he started the season was
scorching.
It wasn't
unrealistic, though.
I don't think anyone anticipated that he was going to keep up that pace.
No, I didn't expect to see 52% for the whole season, but I didn't expect him to go through such a slump that he went through, because he's been a consistent 3-point shooter his entire career. I think it's just, we were talking about this whole conversation, the way the offense has shifted from that ball movement. I think all those guys were just really, really benefiting from the open shots that they were getting. And I think that they kind of liked passing up semi-open shots to find even more open teammates. You saw that a lot with Nick Batum. He would just make that swing pass so fast to Wesley in the corner, or Wesley would hit Batum out there, or with any combination of Lillard, Batum, and Matthews, they were all willing to find each other outside, and they were all getting themselves really open shots. And that's, as we've been saying this whole time, that's kind of, we'd like to see the Blazers get back to that, I think, is that awesome ball movement that they started the season with, or at least some variation of it. If defenses have adjusted, it would be nice to get back to some semblance of the offense they were running, as opposed to maybe every other night you get that kind of performance.
All right, I'm going to throw something at you. We've been talking for 45 minutes about the Trailblazers. Have we said LaMarcus Aldridge one time?
Well, we've talked about how he's leading the league in shot attempts. I think that's just kind of the all-star that he is. He's that understated guy. It doesn't seem like he's shooting 22 times a game and leading the league in shot attempts. Does it to you?
I think in the last couple of days, it's felt like that.
With the offense slowing down, or exactly, just being more ISO?
And it's, he's really, in the last couple of games, and again, I could be wrong on this, but it does seem like he's just gotten off to slow starts. And it's funny when Mike Barrett and Mike Rice talk about it, because they are the kings of momentum. They love talking about momentum. But I do really think it's true that LaMarcus misses a couple of these shots at the beginning of the game, and then everything just sort of falls apart around him. And, you know, you talk about, he usually is able to get it back on track later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you talk about Mo Williams. If he isn't on, you know, he can't, it's very difficult for him to get it back on track. LaMarcus does tend to do that. But it is a little frustrating when you're watching these games and, you know, Damian Lillard slices through the defense, throws out one of those awesome left-handed around the defender kick out passes to a wide open Aldridge for, you know, one of those elbow jumpers that's basically a layup. And for he misses two or three in a row. And if you're the Blazers, you just have to think, man, you know, this is automatic. You know, we lost 6 points that we normally get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, you're talking about all these players that are slumping. LaMarcus, I don't necessarily think is slumping. I think that he's had to adapt the way that he plays. You know, you're seeing a lot more back to the basket, or maybe not a lot more, but I think that he's now understanding that he can take a lot of these guys back to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time the second half rolls around, he's figured out a way to make it happen. You know, does that mean that he has to be more physical? Does that mean that he gets the jump shot going? Does that mean both, like it did against Washington? He really had the jump shot going. It was, you know, he was cold at the beginning of the game, but he sort of got his groove later on. But it is interesting, though, that we can go that amount of time and not talk about a guy that's, you know,
leading the league player in shot attempts.
Yeah, leading shot attempts. The best player on the, you know, fourth or fifth best team in the NBA. A guy that's, you know, really one of the best players in the NBA, and is having by far the best stretch of his career. You can basically book him for 23-11 every night, and there's, you know, what, maybe one other person in the NBA that can do that, or two other people in the NBA that can do that. And mm-hmm. the type of impact that he has is pretty amazing. Yet he's still the, you know, we can still be hush hush about it and not feel not have it feel all that unusual.
Yeah, I don't. It's easy to overlook a jump shooter, a jump shooting all star who gets most of his points out there, because how much is there to talk about a guy who's shooting 43% mainly on elbow jumpers? That kind of is what it is, I guess. I guess earlier on in the season, and this could be a complete wrong look at it, but if my memory recalls correctly, I feel like he was passing out of double teams a little quicker. I think that teams were doubling a little faster and he was passing out, and that might have contributed a little bit to the better ball movement. Is that something you've noticed, or am I completely off base on that?
No, I don't think you are. I think, though, that Memphis is probably the best example of a team that successfully double teamed LaMarcus. I'm not sure how much teams are double teaming him. He kind of has seemed like he's the second fiddle to Lillard mm-hmm. to a certain extent. It seemed like so much of the team's game was drop it to Aldridge and just let him do his thing. Mm-hmm. And now it's a lot of, you know, obviously there's a lot of pick and roll and things like that, but now it seems like it's a lot more heavy on Lillard and having him try to figure out what to do rather than letting LaMarcus do his thing. And I guess I even shouldn't say a lot. I should probably just say more, because he's still statistically putting up, you know, the exact same numbers in February that he was putting up in December.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a stretch there when he was averaging, what was it, like 16 rebounds a night over like a 4 or 5 game stretch.
Yeah, he was going for, I think, 15 and 28 there for several game stretch there until he had that 10-point outing. But yeah.
But it's just, you know, you sort of know exactly what you're going to expect, or what the outcome's going to be with him. And it's just amazing how consistent he's been. Does he have the same impact on every game, even though he has the same statistical output? I don't think that's necessarily true. However, I do think that, you know, there is that big piece of it is the, you know, the hockey assist that he was embracing. And I think that a lot of that too probably had to do with the Blazers were putting him in a situation, or they were setting up offensively, where when he did pass out of the double team, it was, you know, back to the 3-point line, swing it twice into the corner and get a wide open three. I just feel like the Blazers haven't really had that type of mindset over the last couple of weeks, and that type of setup on offense to be able to have that kind of efficiency.
Yeah, it would be nice to see that again. And you know, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback and say, well, why is Aldridge not kicking out of the double team, or why is Mo Williams not kicking out of the paint when he drives, or why is Damian Lillard not able to find teammates the way he was? You know, I guess maybe we should probably give opposing defenses and opposing coaches more credit, because like you were saying, this is the most elite basketball team in the world. Or, I'm sorry, elite basketball league in the world. So,
hey, you can say team. That's cool.
but they're playing against professional basketball players, the best in the world, every single night, against probably the majority of them are some of the best coaches in the world as well. And so they're able to game plan, and the players are able to execute the game plan. So, you know, we should probably take our hats off a bit to opposing defenses, but I don't think it's unfair to ask for the Blazers offense to pick up the pace just a little bit, kind of get back on track. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah. And I think as a fan, it was really fun to watch.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's really fun to watch a team. Obviously they were shooting an irrationally high percentage from three, but part of that was because the ball movement was so crisp, and it was almost predetermined. You know, you could see Aldridge pass out of the double team, and you knew the ball movement was so good. You could almost just look into the corner, and the dude didn't even have the ball, and you knew that he was going to get a wide open shot. You know,
Wesley, a lot of times.
Or Nick, or even Damian. You know, a lot of times he would get a lot of those open looks. So it was really fun to watch, and that's not to say that it's gone completely away. You know, it's not like the team has forgotten how to score the basketball, but I do think that a lot of that crispness of the beginning of the season has worn off a little bit. A lot of that surely has to do with the way that opposing defenses are playing, but I can't imagine all of it is, as you said. I mean, some of that just has to be the team getting away from it for whatever reason it is. I know we talked about that. It's kind of bringing it full circle into a sense, but that is a lot of, you know, we don't know what the reason is, but whatever the reason is, it's not a lot different, but you can tell the difference both statistically and watching the games. You can tell the difference between the Trailblazers of, you know, mid-December and the Trailblazers of now, you know, first part of February.
Right. Well, let's wrap up this chat with something semi-related, and we'll kind of go for quick answers here. What do you think personally about any sort of potential trades? Is there a way that you can wrangle something up, some kind of a package that the Blazers could put together? Or is there a team that is looking to dump somebody badly enough that they would take a package of Will Barton and Victor Kleber and future second round picks? Personally, I agree with 99% of Blazer fans in saying the bench needs to be bolstered a bit, but they don't have a pick to trade this year. I don't think they can trade their first rounder next year, because you can't have consecutive years without a pick, right?
You can, because look at what Brooklyn's doing. But I think the way it works is when you have protections on picks, you can't trade out of that spot if you don't technically know if you're going to have it or not.
So there's a complication with that Bobcats.
So theoretically, pick, right? I mean, the Blazers are not going to be one of the 12 bottom teams in the NBA this year. I mean, unless it would be a catastrophic drop from where they are now. And I suppose anything can happen, but I can pretty confidently say they're going to make the playoffs. So at that point, that pick goes to Charlotte, whatever it may be. But because of the protection, they can't trade next year's pick, because technically that could go to Charlotte.
Oh, true.
So that's you can trade away consecutive picks, but they would have to be unprotected.
So there's complications with that pick that that basically don't allow Neil Olshey to be wheeling and dealing first rounders.
Right, because you don't know if you're going to have it or not,
Right.
is the idea. I mean, you know you're not going to, but.
They're not going to be giving up CJ McCollum, obviously, this early in his career. He would probably garner the most in a trade, I would think. Darrell Wright, Mo Williams. I don't think teams are lining up for T-Rob, Myers Leonard. Personally, I don't see any way that the Blazers could be a main trading partner. They might be able to help facilitate a trade, but even then, are you getting back something of value that can actually help this bench? Looking around the league, is there any way that you could see the Blazers bringing in some help midway through the season for this bench?
I talked with Dave about this. There were a number of names that we were talking about, and I just, if there were going to be a guy, and it's a gut feeling, and I don't necessarily agree with it, I think it would be a guy like Brandon Bass if they were to do something like that. He's on a really bad team. They're just looking to get any young talent at all and try to free up some cap space, and I think that that would be the way you would that would be the type of guy. But
Isn't his con What's his
I think.
contract?
I have no idea.
I think he's at like the
I'm going to be entirely honest
I
with
think
you.
he's in the 4.5-5 million dollar range, which would make it really difficult to put together a package by Neil O'Shea, because obviously you have to match a certain percentage of the outgoing contract. Yeah, he's making
Right.
$6.4 million this year. And then he's making 6.9 next year. So the Blazers would effectively have to send over roughly 5.5 to 6 million outgoing. And so if you look at Boston's roster, I guess we probably shouldn't break this trade down too much. It was just a proposal.
No, I'm just more, I was more saying, like, for whatever reason, I thought that that would be the name.
That just illustrates the difficulties that Neil O'Shea would have in putting together a trade. Not only does he not have wanted talent necessarily or picks, matching contracts is another difficulty. It just seems to be next to impossible this season.
I think it was a commenter on something I read on the site, and someone had posted, well, the Blazers have no tradable assets.
Well, that's not entirely
And
true.
yeah, and that's what someone followed up with. The Blazers have plenty of assets. It's just you trades don't work. You can't, I mean, let's be realistic. Victor Kluivert, Will Barton, and a second round pick are not getting you anyone that's making as big a difference as CJ McCollum is or Thomas Robinson is.
About Allen Crotton? He's got to be. Teams across the league have got to be lining up to get a shot to trade for Allen
Yeah.
Crotton,
Well, I
right?
mean, I don't know if they're lining up. He might be, but he's probably as good an asset that the Blazers would be willing to part with as anyone right now. It's as you mentioned, it is tough to figure that out. I think a lot of what's interesting too is a lot of what made this season so intriguing in terms of trades, and it's something that I wrote about a couple of times, is the draft upcoming was so hyped. The 2014 draft class, it was so hyped that it got to the point where people, you sort of got the idea that there would be, there could be as many as eight teams that just completely throw in the towel. And on those eight teams, there have to be a couple guys that the Blazers might be able to get back. But we've sort of learned that this 2014 class isn't, it's not the greatest draft class of all time or the greatest draft class in 30 years or whatever people were saying. There's a couple guys that you can tell are going to be very good, but the rest after that is, a bunch of guys that are solid players. So I think that it becomes difficult. I think that teams, when you think about it that way, teams are going to become less less excited with the idea of giving away talent for nothing. I think that if you want to lose, you're willing to give away talent for nothing.
What about the case in Milwaukee where they legitimately tried to assemble a playoff team and ended up with the worst team in the entire league? It's kind of interesting the effort that they made to get to the playoffs, and somehow they managed to surpass all these so-called tanking teams like Philadelphia or Phoenix.
Orlando. Yeah. I think that you could probably put the Lakers in that category, the Knicks in that category. At least the Nets are playing pretty well right now. They might even be the hottest team in the NBA right now. So, but that is an interesting thing. But I do, and the other part of it too, teams that are going to be tanking don't have a whole lot of assets. I mean, there's a reason they're bad, and it's because they don't have that many good players. It really is tough because the Blazers don't have a ton of assets that they can give up because their starting five is such a cohesive unit on and off the court that you can't really give up any of them. I think the same with Mo Williams. I think that Mo, a lot of what he has to do with is the locker room too. And you know, after that, like, how much is CJ McCollum going to realistically get the team in return? Or Thomas Robinson or any of these guys. So it's going to be tough. They're also one of the youngest teams in the NBA. So that makes it a little bit easier to swallow, even though they do have an opportunity to make some noise this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for better or for worse, the roster that we are seeing as of right now is the roster that we're going to be seeing, heading into the playoffs, in late May and early June. I don't see any kind of a realistic trade, or isn't the roster is full as well, so they would have to release a guy to pick up a guy, and so I don't think there's any available free agent right now or D-League player that is even worthy of cutting one of your Blazers and effectively paying him twice just to sign one guy because of the penalty of waiving a guy mid-season. So yeah, I don't see this roster changing much, if at all, by playoff time, and so I think that, you know, they're gonna hopefully right the ship, and they'll try to get back to some of the winning ways that they had early on in the season.
As I said, you know, they are 3-5 in their last 8 games, but the teams that they've lost to are good, and we're talking about how to improve a team that's 20 games over 500. So let's not lose the forest through the trees on this one. I don't want to sound entirely optimistic, but you know, to think about, if we were to say at the beginning of the year the team's going to be 34-14 and we're trying to figure out how to make the team better, you know, we probably would have said just leave it as it is. You know, that it's if it's going to be that good, then just let it ride and see what's going to happen.
That's a great point.
And I think that the team has so far exceeded expectations that now their expectations have shifted to a completely different universe than really where they should be. They're the best offensive team in the NBA. They have at times played good defense. Are they a good defensive team? No. Could they be better? Absolutely. Could they bring in a guy that could be a better defensive player? Absolutely. But, you know, what they are doing is working. You know, Terry Stotts is the coach of the year. Neil Olshey is probably the you know, GM of the year.
He's up there for sure.
And I think that, you know, that has to, every time we talk about this, that it's so important to think and remind ourselves that, you know, the sky is not falling. You know, they lost on a second night of a back-to-back on the road against Golden State. This isn't like they lost at home against Milwaukee. So I think that that's, you know, it's important to always keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to keep the long-term goals and the long-term view in mind writing the season preview or the game previews, because by nature of it, I have to go game by game by game. And so it's a bit easy to get kind of sucked up into the short-term reactionary mode of thinking, like, oh, look at these trends that are popping up over these last 5 games or this stretch of play, because realistically, I'm looking at the next game and I'm looking at how I expect the Blazers to play and how I expect an opposing defense to defend them and whatnot. So it's good to get more of a long-term perspective. And like you were saying, hey, who would have thought 34 and 14, if you would have asked me at the beginning of the season, if you would have said you're going to be 34 and 14, the Blazers are, well, do you have any ideas for a trade? You would think that was silly to propose a trade. You'd say this team is obviously good the way that it's constructed. So I think it's nice to take a step back, get a little perspective, and I think the Blazers can actually ride out this rough patch. I personally have some faith.
Yeah, and they've really given you no indication, I think, otherwise. And you talk about going game to game. Here I am writing an article about how the Washington Wizards haven't been over 500 in 4 years. And John Wall being an all-star is like the greatest thing that's happened to Washington basketball in, I think their last all-star that they had was like from 2008. I want to say it
Arenas?
was Antoine Jameson. Or Arenas. Yeah, one of the two. I mean, it was like 6 years ago that that happened. And part of the Trailblazer story now is they have two All-Stars for the first time in 20 years. And they have an emerging player. We can pick apart Damian Lillard's game, but he's played a year and a half in the NBA. We can talk about, how CJ is, been inconsistent in his 15 games in the NBA. So I have faith too. I've been given really indication to not have that. But at the end of the day, it is a little bump in the road. It's a blip on the radar screen that the team hasn't had this year. But as they move into the All-Star break and beyond, this next week of games is going to be pretty difficult.
So yeah, we got this rough road trip coming up for the Blazers, and they already started out with kind of a tough loss in Washington. So give us an idea of what you and Dave are going to be covering in the video casts that are going to be upcoming.
A number of things. We have some trade talk that we're going to do. We talked a little bit about it, and we also cover a couple other names that have sort of been popping up. And then we had a question come in about, really what we've been talking about in large part. The team has looked a little shaky in the last week-ish, maybe two. What does it do to right the ship? And those are really the main topics of our video casts. Where you can get Dave's perspective on those things as well as mine. And yeah, and we also, so every week now we're going to be doing a couple of videos a week, and hopefully that'll give everyone an opportunity to get little snippets of the video cast rather than having it, one big long video. And they can get it periodically throughout the week, and we're hoping that, people are will enjoy that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I personally was really enjoying that expansion of Blazer's Edge, and I thought it was really cool. And I look forward to seeing that. I've enjoyed all the ones that you guys have put out. And I just want to say thanks again for coming on to the podcast. It was really awesome having you. And I think that we should do this again sometime in the future.
Absolutely, anytime.
So that's a wrap on episode 3 of the BlazersEdge.com podcast. If you'd like to follow Sam on Twitter, you can do that at @SamTung. If you'd like to read his written work, you can check that out on the weekends on BlazersEdge.com. And he's also doing his video cast with Dave Deckard from BlazersEdge.com, released a couple times a week. I'm your host, Chris Lucian. I'd like to say thank you for listening.